Welcome back, Survivor fans. It is episode 8 of season 26 of Survivor Caramoan, Fans vs. Favorites 2.0. I am Ralph, and that is my co-host, Chris.
Hey, you're getting really good at this intro. Like, it's flowing. You're not painting yourself into a corner. This is good.
You do 50-some episodes.
Yeah, we're about 60 here, so yeah. Not even.
You start to figure it out. It only took me 5 dozen episodes.
Right.
So, I feel like that's pretty respectable.
Yeah, no. I think they say third score is the charm, right?
Oh, it's a math joke.
It's a math joke. Look it up.
All right. So, we really don't need to waste time this week with banter, Chris. This is not the episode where...
No, this is gold.
We need to vamp for a long period of time.
You know, this episode... Wow. I mean, it had, like, obvious throwback qualities.
But throwback qualities?
Throwback qualities, yeah. Like, you know, the challenge was very much a retro challenge that we haven't seen in a number of years.
Yeah.
And so it had that throwback quality. But then the episode as a whole, like, it had some throwback qualities back to the days when, like, you know, I feel like for the first 3 or 4 seasons, that's not true. Because the third season had a lot of dud episodes, which is why they instituted the idea of the tribal shuffle. But the first 2 seasons, and then, like, you know, for a while in the middle, like, there was...
You're really wandering, Chris.
No, sorry.
What's your point?
In the middle of the history of Survivor, there was a higher likelihood than not that you were going to get, like, a good episode. And the last 2 or 3 seasons, it's been like a 2-to-1 ratio of duds to, like, really good episodes.
I don't judge them black and white as much as that.
Sure. Sure.
I think there are certainly degrees of excellence in the episodes, and there's been calls for wanting to shake things up, and I am resistant to those calls.
What do you mean?
Like, to change the format of it. Like, what needs to be done to shake up the format and make it fresh? And I don't know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
I don't know that it needs that. I don't agree with those who are saying, well, it can't survive in the form it's in. I think as long as they cast it properly, I think this game takes care of itself. I really do.
Yeah. And so what do you think involves casting it properly?
Not having quitters, I think, first and foremost.
Okay.
Like, you know, people who don't want to be there is such a drag.
Yeah.
It just kills, like, everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And people who self-select out, like Brandon, I'm not interested in that either.
As much as he was, you know, a semi-quitter there and kind of pulled himself out of the game, he provided just as much entertainment. I mean, like...
Yes and no. I want people to be eliminated in the context of the game, not because they had some crazy outburst. That's not why I watched the show. Is to see someone lose it because they made decisions that they regret and they found themselves on the wrong side of the coin and now they're gonna, you know, go out in the way he did. It's not for me.
All right, fair enough.
I see what you're saying about earlier episodes, and it seems like now having so many seasons in the books, it's like people can see the path that they have to take to get to where they need to go.
Right.
But then weeks like this happen and it throws everything back into chaos. And you know, one of the things I tried to explain to other people about why this season has been so, or that why at this point, the last, what, 8 shows, is that what we have left?
You mean left in the season?
Yeah, what, 7 shows?
After today, there are 6 shows left. Or after this episode that we recap, there's 6 shows left. They usually do 14.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, yeah, okay. So 6 episodes.
Yeah.
So they've probably got a double coming in somewhere?
A double elim?
Oh, no, you're right, because they eliminate 3 in the last episode.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so you're right.
Yeah,
right.
We've got 11 left. We need to get down. We need to lose 8.
6 more shows, yeah. And you can't really say that beyond like Eddie and Reynolds, that there are ties that are that strong.
Yeah, I would say Dawn and Cochran.
It's not. I still think those are both individual free agents. I think.
Yeah,
both
I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't think they're as tight as Eddie and Reynolds. But I think, you know, I think 2 and 2A are Dawn and Cochran and Philip and Andrea. I think despite Philip's craziness, I think Andrea actually, you know, trusts him more than anybody out there because of their season bond.
My point in saying this is that with the bonds being as light as they are...
Right, there's a lot of room
There's so much room for shuffle.
Free and, associativity.
Yes. People pairing up in unexpected ways and being able to snag people. And
I feel like there's some sort of chemistry analogy in here for you to make.
You've got Eric and Brenda who are completely on a different game. Like I know there's a game being played by them, and I don't know what it is.
Brenda, I think, yes.
I refuse to think that they are not playing.
Okay, Eric, I don't know how you could say that. I mean, Eric outed himself as Julia with an ice cream scooper this
Correct,
week.
That's true. But I want to give him credit because I feel like...
No, don't. Resist all temptation.
No. I feel like the guy's got so much, like, motive to, like, be better. Like, you know, he made a complete ass of himself last time he played. Like, why wouldn't he want to...
I agree with you, but, like, I mean, like, clearly the light is on and nobody is home. I mean, like, I mean, we're getting way, way ahead here, but, I mean, he talks about two different people coming to him with two different votes that he's supposed to make, and he's just sort of like, you know, the only thing he does is stop short of saying, like, wait, we vote in this game? You know,
yeah,
like,
okay. All right.
He was so far out there. He's like, wait a minute, people are aligning themselves together, and it seems like there's some division in the tribe. Yeah, like... So clueless.
Man. You know, I think it's just...
It's amazing how clueless.
The problem is I want to root for him. That's the problem. It's that, like, you know, I thought the last time I watched he was a really good guy, and I felt terrible that he got charmed. He was no match. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Like, him against Parvati and Amanda and Ceri, no
oh,
chance.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't even Ceri. Wasn't it Natalie? Wasn't she the girl that actually, like...
Natalie's the one that got it, but Ceri was there with them, and Ceri could talk circles around anyone.
Yeah, and Eric was what, like 19 at the time or something.
Yes.
Now he's just now he's just emotionally and mentally 19. I don't think
he's emotionally 19. I agree with the mentally 19.
Yeah, okay. He's probably emotionally more mature than that, but mentally he's. I mean, I'm just amazed because. I mean, you are right. He's got, like, this is, I mean, we sort of touted this season as the Island of Misfit Toys, and he is perhaps the one misfit of amongst them all.
Yeah, for being the veteran that's not playing.
Well, I mean, even just coming in. I mean, like, he's like the only person, I think. I mean, I could be wrong here, but I believe he's the only person who has ever given up immunity at tribal council, without a clear idea of which way it was going to go. Like, I think a couple of people have given up immunity at tribal council, but, like,
Didn't Brandon Hans do it?
He might have, but I think he knew what he was doing there. Or maybe, oh no, you're right. Brandon might have gotten voted out.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay, that's right. Coach turned on him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. And perhaps that's even worse, because it wasn't even like a like feminine wiles kind of thing.
No. It was Coach.
It was just Coach being Coach. Okay, so maybe not. But anyway... I do agree with you that it seems like he has so much to play for, and like has so large a lesson to have learned, such a big lesson to have easily learned.
Yes,
you know.
And he's
got the distance. I think he's got more distance than anybody in this game.
Right. What if it's like he's like one of those people that's like wounded from previous relationships, and so he just never gets close to anyone. You know, it's like,
yeah,
like he's so burned from his last experience that he refuses to.
Isn't he the oldest favorite? I mean, in terms of like time between
most season,
original
most
season,
season
and now.
I agree. Yeah.
So I mean, you'd think the guy would watch a Survivor episode or three between. between the biggest bonehead move in Survivor history and now.
You know, I unlike you, I'm social media engaged with the Survivors, Chris. And
right.
You know, the other Survivors...
And by engaged, does that mean you tweet at them and they ignore it?
I mean, I follow their tweets and I track them and I see what they're tweeting about.
Right.
And Eric tweets about what he's doing occupationally and much less about the game.
So is it like
else just tweets about the game?
Scooped a bubblegum and rocky road today.
No, his latest tweet was about getting a graphic design commission for a llama farm.
Oh, so he's moved on from ice cream scooping.
Yeah, he's not a scooper. He was 19, whatever.
I know. You know what's I know. To be fair, he was 19, yes. It's sort of funny though, cuz like of all people, with the exception of Philip, and Philip, I mean, he deserves the exception because he doesn't shut up about what he used to do. Like, is there anybody else that you know what they do? Like in the
history? I think Kryn's a lawyer.
Okay, yeah. There's a few. I guess there's a few lawyers that you kind of knew they were lawyers, but that was also like. I feel like he's. I feel like Eric's the only person where like nobody ever talked about what it was he did, because obviously it didn't really have any bearing on like what he would be like in the game. Although I guess maybe it ultimately did have a big bearing on what he would be like in the game, but it's just what? Funny to me. Like, I mean, the only
so easily other... scooped. Is there a pun here? Or
I mean, it just, you know, you think of like you think of
hey,
the...
I scooped ice cream, Chris. Let's be careful here.
Okay, but fine. But like, you think of the kid behind the ice cream counter. Like, you certainly aren't picturing a Nobel Prize winner. Like,
hey. What? Did I not just say I was a scooper?
You did. I'm just saying, like. You pick, like, the stereotypical kid you picture behind an ice cream counter
is a very pleasant young man who's going places.
Sure. Yeah. When I picture that, I picture a future Survivor podcaster. That's what I picture.
That's right.
I just think it's funny that we, like how well known his very inconsequential job was.
We've already given him too much airtime.
Indeed.
All right. Where are we? I don't know. Well, we had the merge. Michael came back, was thankful he didn't go home.
Yeah.
Dawn talked about winning $1 million for her 6 kids and saying that was college, and I kind of laughed. I was like, maybe that's 1.5 kids.
I was going to say, okay, 1.5 might be a little understating. Although, okay. I guess right now, I guess
2.5
depends on how old they are. I mean, right now, college, like... You're looking at, what, two bills?
I think the worst thing for her would be to win that $1 million, because then what kind of government aid is she getting? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying.
This may be a be careful what you wish for.
I don't think there's... I think you're trying really hard to find, like, the really gray line.
A problem with winning a million dollars?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Great lining on a silver.
But I was thinking, I mean, with 6 kids, like, that definitely doesn't pay for college for all of them. Well, actually, no, that's not true. It depends on where you go. Private university, big time universities, or like private colleges. Yeah, those are like 40, 50 a year. But like, you know, state schools and stuff like that. Like, you can get out of a. I think you can still get out of a state school for less than a bill. For 4 years, right? Can't you?
Less than a bill for 4 years. Oh, $100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can. Besides, if she can get a couple of her kids to go to Cooper Union, that's free right there.
What's Cooper Union?
Cooper Union's an engineering school in New York City. It's pretty good, but it's been tuition free for its entire existence.
And they rely solely on alumni donations and grants and stuff?
Yeah, and an endowment. Although there's been articles in the Times recently about them contemplating
tuition,
yeah.
Charging a fee to go to their school.
Yeah. I mean, maybe one of them gets on scholarship or something. And...
All right. Well, we lost the point again. So, you know, it was good because it helped to illuminate what was to come. And
yeah.
I didn't really get that at the time, but
right.
It was very helpful. And,
right.
And it wouldn't shock me if she had said these things like 11 days ago on the island. And they're just like cutting it in now when they need it, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, indeed. Well, and I mean...
Dawn breaks down every day.
I was just gonna say she might have one of these like every 3 or 4 days. she seems a little more prone to it than others. Although she did make it sound like this was like the first time it had happened, and that she kind of was not surprised about it because she felt like the timing of it was about the same as when she felt like she was losing
right.
it the last right. time she played.
Shortly after the merge.
So, wait, remind me, Brenda is. I'm suddenly crossing my wires.
Miami Dolphins cheerleader.
But Brenda played in that season with the season that Judd won, right? Fabio?
No.
No?
Wait.
Yeah.
I thought she was in the Sophie season.
No, she definitely wasn't in the Sophie season.
Wasn't Sophie there at the end with, like, Sash and...
No, Sophie was the Coach Albert season.
Coach and Albert.
Oh, okay. So you do have Brenda in the Sash season. Yeah, I think that's
I have
correct.
Brenda in the Sash season.
Yeah, because they were kind of aligned together, weren't they?
Yes.
Some Survivor experts we are.
I think Nicaragua. I think they feel like that was definitely their season.
Yeah. It was Survivor Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. Okay.
And that's the one
so
that,
the winner
that Judd, a.k.a.
Judd.
Fabio.
Judd.
Right?
Oh, right. And there were all those old ladies who kept making it to the end.
Yeah. Holly and...
Holly and... Jane,
yeah. And one of those two was, like, I remember was in some crazy, like, strength challenge against, like, Chase the Beefcake.
Did this have a Redemption Island?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Jimmy Johnson season.
Yeah, I thought that was Jimmy Johnson season. So that was the age season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So we spent about 90 seconds here just trying to recall who played on what season. Which doesn't really solidify our spots as Survivor experts.
There was one-legged Kelly and Kelly Purple.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Wait. Oh, yeah. There was one-legged Kelly and Kelly Purple, right. Which was, like, right. the worst name ever for Kelly, or for anybody who needed to have, like, some other distinguishing characteristic beyond
their name.
No,
but she was so dumb. She deserved to be Kelly Purple.
Oh, and she, like, self-selected out, didn't she?
Yes,
both her and Nayanka in the same episode.
Awful.
That was a low point for the casting department.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's bring it back to this season. So Dawn has her breakdown, but starts to very much nicely set up what's about to happen for her in this episode. And by the way, did you rewatch the episode or did you just watch it once?
I just watched it the one time.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to have a rewatch, but what were you gonna say?
Well, there's another sort of foreshadowing-y thing in there. And that's that Corinne talks about a blindside. And I mean, I didn't pick up on it the first time we watched, but
and she taps on her wrist, she's like, blindside time.
Yeah, it's blindside. I'm up for a good blindside or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sure enough, you know, what was to come, but of course, a blindside. The most ironic one possible when she's the one saying it on camera.
Correct.
I
completely agree.
So shall we go into Corinne or should we talk about little ancillary stuff first?
What's ancillary?
Ancillary? Okay, so shall we talk? Shall we talk challenge?
The challenge? Yeah, let's talk challenge.
I mean, the challenge was so excellent.
The structure was nice.
The structure was nice. I love that they got them down to three, but like that wasn't enough to be the final.
No.
They forced the final three to go through two rounds to determine a winner, not just one. I thought that was good, considering considering they went like what did they go? They went from 12 down to 6, and then 6 down to 3, but they weren't about to go, it seems like the natural step from there is just 3 to 1.
3 to 1, right.
But instead, it's 3 to 2 and 2 to 1.
Yeah, yeah.
It, it harkens back to the days of old with Survivor. I mean, this was an old standby for a while. This was it wasn't a Survivor season without this challenge.
Survivor preceded Fear Factor, right? It did.
I feel like it did. Yeah, simply because
and so,
Fear Factor,
you know,
is reality.
Before Fear Factor was making people eat live scorpions and stuff.
Right. We were Survivor.
This show was doing it first, and yeah. I remember watching the original season when it was like every show was like groundbreaking, and like everyone was talking about it. Like,
yeah,
the one with the food challenge was like, I can't believe we just watched people eat that.
Oh,
stuff
I know.
On television.
It was particularly awesome that as they're standing there. Eric says, mine just moved.
the topper, yeah.
That was soap. Exactly. That was the icing on the cake right there. Like, you know it's coming, but even still, like, it just...
Yeah.
So great.
And they started with a really good one. Like, those grubs.
What are those things called?
Holy crap. Grubs. They're just grubs.
Grubs. Yeah. They're appropriately named. I mean, and just the nastiness that is their mouths look like after they're done there. Like... I mean, it just looks like an inkwell exploded in their mouths.
Well, they've probably just eaten a whole bunch of grub poop.
God. Oh, that was it was so disgusting to watch. And then they follow that up with, what was it? They call them shipworms?
Shipworms.
Oh, I mean, like, the first thing I thought after when they were doing this was, if this is the kind of thing that can bore through the hull of a ship, should you be putting this inside your body?
I think they were dead, though.
Were they?
Yes, they weren't moving.
Oh my goodness!
I think, though, you're right. If it's able to bore into ships, you wouldn't want to eat it live.
If this thing can eat through steel, I don't think you should have it inside your stomach.
I agree.
Holy cow!
I agree. You know, one of the things I meant to I wish I had rewatched it, because there were some really great things that either Jeff said or happened, and they make like amazing band names, like. When just like, hey, Andrew, you have a shipworm mustache.
Yeah, shipworm mustache.
Shipworm mustache is so good. It's a fantastic band name. Shipworm mustache.
Or when Eddie said, I bit the beak first or something.
Yeah, I bit the beak first. You know, that balut is something that, like, you can
I remember
still get
the balut
here.
From before.
You can still get that here. You can get balut here. Yeah.
Oh.
You go to a Filipino food store in the Chicago area, you can find balut. And, like, I can remember trying it, but I didn't, like, eat, like, the embryo-y part. Or maybe we weren't having the ones that were actual embryos, and they were just duck eggs.
Oh,
that's entirely possible. Because I don't recall ever eating any beaks, and I know I've seen them, and I know it turns my stomach seeing that stuff. So
Was it just me, or did it seem like Eddie, at every point in this challenge, even though he advanced twice... was, like, attempting to gag himself.
Yes.
Like, he had, like, two fingers, like...
Yes, in
full,
his mouth.
Full throttle, like, he was in up to the knuckle. And I did not understand. Like, was he trying to gag himself into, like, just opening his throat even further? Does that work?
This is unpleasant to discuss, the techniques.
Yeah.
But I did say the cutest technique was clearly Brenda trying to just hold her mouth in and, like...
Oh, was her hand over her
I don't
mouth?
Know what was going on. She's like throwing her head back, dancing around, and doing Brenda things.
Yeah, I mean, they all got into it in one way or another, and it was enjoyable. You know, you had Malcolm making a face and sort of shaking his tongue around afterwards, like, blah. And you had Philip with, as crazy as Philip is, like, it was just entertaining. It didn't feel like crazy Philip. It was just entertaining. He's like, I like that it's slimy. Like,
or the fact that the minute a winner was called, everyone
just heaved the rest up. Yes, exactly.
It was out.
And the funny thing was, is Michael got called the winner before he actually was.
Well, he almost vomited, and that would have like DQ'd him,
invalidated it, and then everybody else would be picking the food up off the sand.
All right, or there's the one where it's like, we just told like he's like, oh, Eddie has to go find that piece. Yeah,
Malcolm
should have just let him get to the point where he'd like pick it up, put his mouth, and then finish. Just to, like really turn that nut out.
It was such an epic challenge, and then on top of it to end up with, I mean,
Cochran,
as Jeff pointed out, David versus Goliath. Indeed, I mean, you know, the as I think, what did Cochran call him? The golden god of our tribe. And...
Well, I meant to mention that because it seems odd that no one's talked about how no one knows Malcolm.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's labeling him this golden god, but what do you actually know? You never saw his season. You don't know how golden god-y he is.
But, I mean, he's been a key person for them in a lot of challenges.
Most of them are losing end.
What? No. No,
that's not true. That's not true. Yeah, well, I'm just recalling the first challenge.
Yeah, the only challenge is the very first one.
But
where
then, like,
Reynolds,
Phillips
like,
had to step in and be the guy, like, finishing. Phillips had to be the guy finishing the challenges off. I feel like that's a little emasculating, whatever. Anyway.
I guess.
It's odd how little people talk about how.
Well, they were on opposite tribes, though, for the last two or three challenges.
Oh,
Malcolm and Phillips.
Cochran and. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I do see what you're saying. Like, he certainly doesn't know the history that we know, in terms of his ability to dominate a challenge. Right. But I mean, it's not tough to see. I mean, he is, and he, I feel like, and maybe this is just my subjectivity because he's my horse, but I feel like even with Reynolds and Eddie there, Malcolm is still, like, the Adonis among them.
I think you're a little blind. I don't know.
I might be a little blind. I agree. I acknowledge that I may be a little bit blind. But, I mean, Cochran coming out the winner. And Cochran, you gotta love Cochran. I mean, this guy, he's so on the meta level, and it's so great. Because he dissects it all himself. He recognizes, like, anybody else on this tribe goes through this, like, completely self-aggrandizing celebration, and
right.
It would have been totally like
a Troyzan or something.
Exactly. It would have been completely unstomachable. But yeah. For him, it was somehow endearing. Yeah. And, you know, it's, as Malcolm put it, it's the one challenge he could win that Cochran could win, so it was nice for him to check that off his bucket list. And
well, then the cocky moment of I'm not going to keep him around long. And
it's not like he was trying to vote him out that time and he got foiled,
right?
But right. You're right. He's not nearly in the position of power that he thinks
no.
He is.
Right.
So, shall we move on to Corinne, the coup de grace here?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to talk about some Philip just because...
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, he's you know, always, there's always time for Philip, but...
Sure.
Just, the main thing was, like, when Corinne was trying to steer the rest of the Favorite Alliance into her camp and just tell Philip to go this way or suck it, like...
Uh-huh.
The point that Cochran made, that Philip is not a silent minority, was such a good point. Like, that, like, if you don't do what he says, he will make such a stink about it at Tribal that it will inspire some rebellion in the other group. Like, they will feel like they have a chance to weaken the alliance, even though he wasn't aware of how weak it already was.
In the fans, you mean.
Right, it'll inspire the fans or whoever else is on the wrong side of the numbers.
Oh, I see.
That, oh, things yeah. aren't as bad for me as I think because
right. all of these really... cracks are coming up to the bubbling up
right.
to the surface.
Right, and it was in that moment that I realized that Philip is crazy like a fox. Like, he has gotten to the point where, you know, his tantrums prevent any dissension from those who are with him.
I see what you're saying.
You know, and it's a very different technique than a Boston Rob. Yeah. It's not even close to a Boston Rob, but it's
well,
the same idea.
To be fair, he's stealing. I feel like just enough from Boston Rob. Like, you know, he talked. You know, he was talking to everybody about, you know, don't allow anybody to get isolated in a one-off conversation with the fans.
Yeah,
and there was something else he said. There was something with I guess he was very overt about it. He was talking to Andrea something about, like, I mean, this was a little ridiculous. He was talking about how when you're falling asleep at night, just picture yourself as Boston Robin. What would he do?
Right.
I love it. Do you suppose that Philip has a WWBRD wristband?
Yeah. That wouldn't shock me, anyone.
If anybody does, he should.
Yeah.
I suppose you're right. There is a degree of crazy like a fox that he's got going on.
I'm pulling for him. I can't.
Really?
I can't help it anymore. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
yeah.
Stop.
I want to see the Philip end game. I want to see him present his pitch to the jury. I want him to snap out of it and just go completely loose and be like,
"Well, step one is going to be not wearing a feather to the final tribal."
Like, I have finally fooled all of you into agreeing with my master plan all along, and I'll explain to you in 10 steps how I got here.
I think, I don't know. I can't give him crazy like a fox. I mean, the guy in his, and maybe you're right. Maybe he's just working himself up, and it's like he needs to sell himself on this. You know, you can only, you're only going to be able to pull it off if you buy it yourself. But like that confessional where he's just babbling on, and they're talking about she wants to vote out me, the specialist. She's going to vote out the specialist. I'm the one who brought her into Stealth R Us. Like anybody else would give a damn about Stealth R Us to go out and try to bring people in to Stealth R Us.
Right.
As if other people, as if he is one amongst many on the recruitment team for Stealth R Us.
She wouldn't have Stealth R Us without me. Yeah, no one would.
Exactly. I got news
for you. You're the only one.
Exactly. Oh, I guess, I don't know, it's possible you're right. I'm not there yet, though. Okay, can we talk about Corinne now?
Yeah, we'll talk about Corinne.
Okay.
You know, when people were talking about the cast, and they were like, well, who's this Corinne? Why is she here? I was like, I believe, and I know, I hope this doesn't sound revisionist, because I feel like I've been in this camp from the beginning, but I knew that she would provide a lot of commentary where others were too afraid to be outspoken or too nice to say bad things about others.
Sure.
And I knew she would play hard because publicly. I knew she was like one of those who was like upset when she got voted out, and she was very sort of like, you know, animated on the jury about like not being in the game anymore. And I like people like that because it's like, okay, it means everything to them to stay in the game.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
So I from the beginning was like, Corinne's going to be fine. She was in the Gabon season, you know.
Right.
Like, there were a lot of characters there, and she was one of them. So,
yeah.
I will miss her. I mean, it was a great episode to see her go, but I'll miss
it. It was a great episode. I mean, the spin that occurs, the 180 that takes place when it seems like she's got everything she needs going for her, and her and Malcolm are about to seize control of the game.
To your credit, things played out for the first, you know, part of it, just like you said it would.
What do you mean?
Well, with like Malcolm approaches Corinne, he's like, "Hey, here's my thing.
Yeah.
You know, we should join with you." And
right.
It went exactly like that. And then they realized they were 6-6, and they
got greedy. Well, I mean, so okay. So here's the thing: is at the very beginning of the episode, and I know it's hard. It might be hard to believe this because obviously we're potting this after I've watched the whole episode. But from the very beginning of the episode, I felt like I heard too many people. I feel like I heard Malcolm say it. I felt like I heard Corinne say it. And I felt like I heard maybe Philip or maybe Dawn. I don't remember who. So, but at least one other person talking about how they needed to make the move. And I couldn't help but think from the very beginning, like, these people are all way too eager to make their move. And the analogy, it always comes back to poker for me with this. And I feel, you'll be right there with me, I'm sure. I think of the scene in Rounders when Worm and I don't even remember the guy. What is Matt Damon's character's name in that movie? I can't even remember. The two of them are at the. It'll come to me in a minute. They're at the lounge or whatever it is where the cops all play upstate New York, and Matt Damon starts playing first. And then Worm shows up later, even though he wasn't supposed to. And Worm starts, he's dealing, and he starts base dealing. And at one point, he deals Matt Damon 3 kings.
The whole house.
No. Oh, it was three kings. It was because they're playing stud, and he gets rolled up.
Two kings down and a king.
Exactly, yes. And Matt Damon folds them. And later on, if they all get beat up, Worm says, he's like, why didn't you play those kings? Well, I was dealing, and Damon was like, that wasn't the move. The move was the fold. And that's exactly what nobody seems to want to grasp here. Is like, and that's an overall theme in poker, right? That like, that 9 times out of 10, the big move that you're going to make is the fold on a big laydown, not like some amazing bluff or something like that.
Well, I feel like you're mixing your analogies a little bit here. Like, sometimes the move is the fold when you can tell that, like,
right,
you know, your read gives you every bit of information. You know you're supposed to be sucked into the hand, but you make the right fold. But
right,
this is one where it's like you just didn't want to come on so strong.
But I guess
so
what
early.
I mean, well, right, and that's what. But I guess that's what I mean is that
it's really that bothering me that we can't think of Matt Damon's character's name.
It's
Johnny. No,
no, it's not Johnny. I don't know. It's short. Anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, the pitfall that so many people fall into playing poker is they're so itchy to make the move, to make some big play, that sort of thing. And when really, like, the best, like, the big play that
you
want to
be Knish. You just want to grind out
exactly,
that income and,
exactly.
You know, make sure you get from
you
day
just
to
wanted
day
an opportunity to work in another character's name so it looked like we knew what we're talking about with this movie.
Yeah, we know the movie.
I want to say Pat, but I know that's not right.
No, that's Pat Dugan.
So that's the thing I felt like was going on in this episode. And
Mike McDermott,
yes, of course. Is I feel like Corinne was just so itching to make a move here, and she was like so worked up about it that she couldn't actually make the move. Like, she, the fact that she was trying to make a move here was not the bad part. It was that she was so worked up about it that she had to be like super controlling about it. She made two huge, huge fatal errors.
Yeah.
Fatal error one, objecting to Philip's split vote.
Yeah.
Who gives a damn if he wants his split vote?
That helps, actually.
Exactly.
It helps.
If you actually have those six people, if he runs a split vote, all you got to do is get your six people and say, he thinks there's a split vote. We're not going to do that. We're going to let them do their split vote. That means out of the six left over that they have, they end up splitting it, and now there's not enough to vote anybody out, and our six win,
yeah.
That was hurdle number one that she failed to jump over. Number two.
Well, it's one of those. That's the mistake made from wanting to see your script and your script play out exactly the way you thought.
Exactly. Yes, she gets dialed into what she wants to see to happen, and she didn't adapt to the cards that were dealt to her. Instead, what happened was before the dealer even cut the deck, she decided, "I'm running a bluff this hand," and that you can't do that, right? Like, you got to look at what's happening. You got to look at what's going on around you. The other thing was even when that was all going down, all they had to, like, she had seemed to have navigated everybody towards getting Sherry out, even though people weren't terribly thrilled with that. Cochran was kind of hip to what was going on. You know, he commented on Corinne being rather interested in seeing Sherry going home not Eddie or Reynolds, which I don't understand why she wants to keep either of them around. Yeah. But it seemed like she had people steered towards Sherry. And then she got greedy. And she went for Dawn. She had the six she needed. And in fact, actually, was going to have almost everybody voting for Sherry, which is all she needed. If she gets Sherry out, they're done. Then they've got their five, or their six against the other's five. But no, she had to go and talk to Dawn. Like, she didn't know what she was doing. Like, Dawn, she didn't know how to read the situation. Dawn is, like, A, flaky.
Yeah, she's very flaky.
And B, was not obviously somebody who wanted to come with her.
If anyone was obviously going to come with her, or was a weaker link, it would have been Brenda.
Exactly. Yes.
Brenda would have been the play to be like, hey, why don't you come make a move? Because you would think of people, Brenda would like to make moves. She has no ties to anyone specifically. Like, that feels like an easy read.
And then the one other mistake that I feel like I saw coming.
Is this the third of two mistakes that Corinne made?
No, this is a different mistake that was not made by Corinne. All
right.
Yes, it is the third mistake, but not by Corinne.
Okay.
This one's of Malcolm's doing. He didn't bring Eric along.
No.
No, he didn't work Eric at all. He's like, I can get Eric. I can get Eric.
Yeah.
But, like, especially if you know Eric, which Malcolm, of all people,
clearly
should know
not.
Eric. But he should, though, because Malcolm is, like, the self-described survivor supervan who, like, was flipping out just about the fact that he was standing 100 feet from Jeff Probst.
Yeah.
Like, he of all people should know that Eric is so clueless when it comes to gameplay that you got to work him from the beginning. Like, you can't just assume that he's with you. And clearly, that's what ended up burning him.
Are people that need to be massaged and carried along and tended after like a little sheep. And
Malcolm,
he didn't read that.
And the other thing Malcolm should have been doing is, I mean, Corinne knows that he's got an idol.
Right.
So he can talk about idols with her. Now, he probably doesn't want to share with her that Reynold has the other idol. He, like, right. as long as he can be the only person who knows that information, the better. But he can talk about the idea of an idol being played and draw and making sure, like, drawing the votes from the other people. Like, it's totally fine if they vote for Malcolm if they vote for Eddie or Reynold, as long as you know which one they're going to vote for and they don't actually split the vote. Play that idol, you know, use it to your advantage. And he let that go too much. I mean,
either one of those plays works and gives them the numbers advantage, then I agree.
He's essentially in control of two idols. And to have been in that thin a spot, you should be looking to use one of those idols there.
Which is why he's still alive. I've not given up on that group at all. They are still in a position to take control of the game.
And it looks like he might be trying to work Dawn, who suddenly, you know, again, who knows what they're spoon-feeding us here the promos. But it looks like she might be willing to entertain this. This is what I didn't get about Dawn, is she talked a lot about, like, this is when the move occurred last time, and, you know, Cochran made the flip, and I just kind of let the game happen in front of me, and that bit me in the ass, or whatever. And I just didn't understand how... I mean, ultimately, I guess it worked for her. But I really didn't understand how seeing the game unfold, seeing a big move occurring in front of her again, how just sharing that information with everybody was, like, radically altering... Like, now she's doing it all right. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't see how that... I guess I can't ultimately judge because she ended up on the right side of the vote this time. And so maybe that was the right thing to do there. But it just seemed odd to me because it felt like she was talking about, you know, she was chastising herself for her inaction in her first time around. And I just feel like passing along information is not action, you know?
Well, I think it's trying to do a different path than you did before.
I guess, yeah.
You know, whereas before it was like just sort of hop along with what was happening. This time it was take what you've gotten and try to run with it. And I thought the whole sequence of her going to Cochran going to Andrea going to Philip was this great little game of telephone.
Oh yeah, it was
that
excellent.
We got to play along with. It was really good.
It was really good, and especially I feel like the Andrea Cochran interaction was particularly good because there was just this wonderfully convey, you know, if they were actors they could have won awards for this scene.
They think like this wonderfully, like, holy crap.
Yes, exactly. This wonderfully conveyed sense of dread.
Yes.
Of like, we have stepped in it.
Right.
You know?
We have been totally blind. She has been leading us down this path. It has been her doing, Corinne's doing.
And the fact that they were able to scramble and turn things around is pretty impressive. I mean, ultimately, really what it came down to was the fact that...
Including the sad scene where Eric's like, just point to the name.
What the heck was that? Like, how is
that different than just whispering the name?
How is that different? It's worse.
It's worse.
It calls more attention. Like people can understand. People can figure out what name is being communicated when you point to it.
I just want all people to like. If you want Eric to vote, I want all of them to walk him over to the flag and point at. Let's talk about this flag for a second. How did it happen again, season after season, that someone tricks the tribe into thinking, I know the local language, and here is something that means something.
Anil Adam.
It means new start.
The best part is that somehow Malcolm got Andrea spouting that it's
correct.
It means something.
Everyone falls for it every freaking season.
I gotta work on. I gotta come up with a word. I gotta come up with something for my, whenever I end up on Survivor. I gotta know. I gotta have a plan. What should we do? Like, should I come up with, ball, with an anagram for tribal council?
Right. Yeah. Just mispronounce it somehow.
Right.
Just pathetic.
Or maybe I'll get I'll take your last name and turn it backwards and. You know, that could have some sort of...
You could take it forwards, and no one would still know what you were truly talking about. That's fine. Unless you're confused at
the I could always just say Bayonetta and, like, and claim that it's a tribute to my favorite season of Survivor when there was a tribe called Bayonetta, and they won't realize that actually it was Bayonetta.
Yeah. Yes.
There was wow them with my...
The rocket scientist named...
Yeah, I was just going to say, Misty the rocket scientist.
Misty the rocket scientist. Oh my god, what a great combination.
Oh,
it's like she tried, the mother tried to name her into a stripper, and she somehow ended up a rocket scientist.
So at this point, let's I don't want to handicap everybody, but give me like, give me a few, who do you think are your... Your three favorites at this point in the game. Who do you think have the? Give me three people you think have the best shot to make it.
I play this game with others, Chris. I've been a little Survivor unfaithful.
Oh, really?
And the game we play is like, who's your final three? And it's like,
okay, who you been playing with? Jonas and Shrey?
Jonas and his coworker Lizzie Friend.
All right.
I think Friend is her last name.
Well, we're working with a lot of shout outs here.
Well, it's all to try to get them to subscribe to the show. And actually, I think she did say that she was subscribing. So, all
right. Welcome aboard, Lizzie.
She has
Friend.
A lot of insights, and I think she'd be happy to come on the show if we arrange that. But
yeah.
Anyways, she's very – she knows what she's talking about. And
we talk an awful lot about having guest podcasters. And never
who's
really
your final three? Right. Well, it's like – you know, it's our thing. It's a shtick.
Right.
You know, we'll bring people on, but – really, we won't. Just
it
like
is, it is.
Someday...
It is our joke, as the Morgan Freeman joke is to PTI.
It's the Matt. We've run out of time for Matt Damon on Jimmy.
Right. Oh yeah, that's even better. That's good. That's good.
The Lindsay Buckingham on
right?
What up with that?
Lindsay Buckingham on what's up with that?
No, what up with that? What do you mean? What's up with that?
No, it's what's. It is what's.
What up with that?
I think the very first one was what up with that. Because I feel like I saw it a long time ago, or I saw it on a rerun or something like that. But I think it's actually what's up with that. I actually we just watched this past SNL with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
While we were eating dinner tonight, and it was not that good.
No, the Mike Rice though, completely, totally worth the price of admission.
Who?
The Mike Rice.
Oh yeah. That one was decent.
Not better than decent.
So no, it was decent. It was a good joke. It was twice as long as it should have been, though, or at least 50%. I'll reduce my sentence there. But anyway, like Stacey was actually clamoring for that sketch. She's like, I want to see Jason Sudeikis in his jumpsuit doing the dance in the background.
Yeah. Right. All right.
Anyway,
okay, so,
back to the game here. Who's your final three?
Handicap. Oh, who's my final three?
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. Like, I guess you could go a couple of different paths, but I think path A is like a Philip, Andrea, Dawn.
Okay.
The problem is I can't figure out which one of the three of them would have won immunity to get the three of them there.
Okay, Andrea probably.
You see what I'm saying?
It's got to be Andrea out of those.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Well,
Andrea.
Or Phil. I mean, because if it's upper body, Philip's got it.
Well, that's what he's reminded us of. Right. So I feel like that's one final three. And
okay.
The other final three would be like a Malcolm, Eddie, what's his name? Eric with like Malcolm taking 900. Like, you know what I'm saying?
You really think it would be – I think it would be Malcolm, Eddie, Reynolds. Because I think out of those three – I mean, because I think if that four makes it to the final four,
mm-hmm.
I think –
Why would Malcolm want to talk up against Reynolds? Reynolds can talk. I mean, it's annoying, but he can talk.
Yeah, but he's a fan. And there's only like two fans on the jury. Especially if there's two fans on the jury if Eddie's in the final three also.
Yeah. Okay. You know? I'll buy it.
Eric is so likable because nobody he can't talk much, but
yeah,
like,
but he's got but no nobody's, case. This is not going to be a bitter jury. This
yeah, but
not
nobody's
going to
look. Well, there might be some bitterness on this jury. Are you kidding me? You don't think somebody like Philip would hold a grudge? Corinne, there's some bitterness on there.
No, Corinne would be objective.
And actually, Corinne's the one reason to actually bring Eric with you to the final three because
right.
Eric is part of sending. It right. is actually sort of the. Right. part of sending her home. I actually feel like Brenda is, you know, she's doing just enough to be plugged into what's going on, but is not plugged into the point where she's seen as the person running the show and calling shots and thus engineering people's ouster.
I feel like that's Andrea. I feel like Andrea
has
the opportunity to say that she was there making things happen, but without having that thing on her that says, like, oh, you are the one who's why yeah. you're the reason I'm out.
I could see a Brenda Andrea Dawn final three. I could see
there's no chance Cochran's making it to the end, right?
You don't
no
think
chance?
So?
I'm asking. I don't think there's a chance. Like, who would want to be there at the end with him, and how is he going to win his way there?
Right. So in other words, you're saying even if he's final four, like, you think no matter what the final four is, he is the least desirable person to take with you to the final?
Correct.
And he's got virtually no chance of winning immunity.
I think he's a lock for the 100,000 fan favorite. Yep.
Maybe.
Come on.
Who won fan favorite last season? Was it Denise? Did she win it? Or was it Welchel? It was Welchel, wasn't it?
It was Welchel.
I can't believe I just called her that.
Blair.
I know. Yeah, I mean, it could be Malcolm, but you're right. Cochran probably.
He's got it.
Did Cochran win fan favorite his season? Was there a fan favorite that season?
Yeah, they've been doing fan favorite for a while.
Okay. So I think I could see like a Brenda Andrea Dawn. I could see like a Michael.
Oh, Ozzy won player of the season.
Oh, did he? Yeah, that makes sense.
He edged out Cochran.
I could see a Michael, Malcolm, maybe even like, yeah, like a Michael.
You just put like, Michael in the final three?
Yeah.
You just put Michael in the final three.
I could see it happening.
Michael.
Because he's with that group. He's less of a threat to win final immunity. So, like, Malcolm may want to actually string him along. He's a fan, so, like, you know, really the only vote you have to worry about going to him is from Corinne, because she loves a gay.
And she got one more of it in.
Oh, my God. It's like, you know, to be honest, like, the very first time, it wasn't that bad. I mean, some part of me, like, cringes just at any time you use it. But, like, the fact that, like the degree to which it's awful that she uses it increases exponentially with each use.
Yeah.
It's right. And we're at like 9. So it's bad, you know.
I'm with you.
It's okay, how about this? Who would you say has the worst shot of winning right now?
The worst shot of winning right now?
Yeah.
It might be Cochran. I just don't see him getting to the end. They would be so dumb to let him.
Between
get to
the end. Combination of how big a threat he would be if you brought him into a final tribal, combined with his likely inability to win final immunity.
Correct.
Yeah, I could see that. I think, now that I think about it, I'm revising here. I'm gonna say Brenda, Andrea, Philip.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's that one. Because I think Dawn is the same as Cochran at a final tribal. I think she's... Because what she lacks in, like, in Cochran's general convincingness or whatever, she makes up for in, like, being just, like, the mom of the tribe, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Michael talked about that at the when
making
they had
sandwiches
their feast.
At the
yeah, she goes into mom mode. She's making sandwiches for everybody. She's cutting the cheese.
Literally cutting the cheese.
Literally, very well clarified and appropriate use of literally. So yeah, I think actually the thing is she and Cochran need to stick together because of their threadiness.
That's true. That is how they get to the end, is with each other.
Yeah,
that's true.
I think with each other, and I mean the problem is they need a third to like bring into that, in particular a third who can win an immunity, to bring into their alliance.
Brenda or Eric?
I don't know.
Free agents.
Eric, you can't put. No
Chris, we're pushing an hour. We should put a bow on this thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. All right. Well, shall I hit up the?
Yeah, go ahead. Online presence.
So our online presence, which may or may not start tweeting soon. Now that I've unearthed the password to our account, our Twitter account is @TribalPodcast. Our email address is podcast@tc.vanb.net, and our RSS feed can be found online at the web address tc.vanb.net.
And I just want to apologize to Jonas and Lizzie again for not getting you guys on this week. You know, we're right at an hour. I just feel bad that we can't get you guys on. But
they're waiting in the green room.
Next week, we'll have you guys on, and I can't wait to see you guys then, and thanks again for listening.